Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jackie Cooper, Global Chief Brand Officer and Senior Advisor at Edelman. Welcome to a special series of The Trustmakers. We're recording on the ground in the sun at the 2023 Cannes Lions International Festival of Creativity. Over the next few days, I'll be speaking with marketing professionals about this year's festival and gather their insights on Edelman's seventh annual report on brand trust, the collapse of the purchase funnel. And I am thrilled to be joined by cultural expert Jess Wiener. Jess runs her consultancy, Talk to Jess, where she partners with some of the world's biggest brands, helping them to become more inclusive and culturally fluent. Her clients have included Unilever, Mattel, Warner Brothers, and Nike. And not only is Jess an entrepreneur, a storyteller, an educator, a very inspirational woman, but I'm also lucky enough to call her my friend. Jess, welcome to The Trustmaker.
Hello, friend. Happy to be here.
So this is a really nice one to do for both of us because we've been on a long journey together. I think it's 18 years.
I was doing the math. I think we might be closer to 20.
Okay.
Next year will be my 20th anniversary working with Dove, and that was because of you. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we met originally working on Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
We sure did.
And we had lots of young girls needing some support. And you were this already kicking it empowerment expert. And we thought, oh, she can help us. And then I actually sold my agency to Edelman. And we came here together at Edelman on the Dove work, on the campaigns for Real Beauty, which we're still touching in many ways. So it's been quite a journey, right?
It has been a real journey. And truly, I'm here because of you. I know I've said that to you privately, but I'll say that to you publicly, because I think the championing of how you've behaved in your career and what you do for me in particular, but for lots of people. Yeah, you brought me into the brand world. I was an educator and a playwright and writing an advice column for two super for celebrities, and then you said, hey, let's play on this Dove work. Like, let's bring that wisdom and knowledge of young girls over to Dove. And it changed my whole life and the whole trajectory of my career.
Well, that's incredible. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I think it had a little to do with you, but
a little, but you opened beautiful doors. I just like to walk in them with you.
Thank you. Well, thank God you did walk through them with me, because we helped that campaign do super well. And here we are now at the Cannes Festival of Creativity, which is in a way like a full circle for those nearly 20 years, because we're here where all of the brand ideas get inspired. And for you coming here, I think, is it your first
time? It's my first time.
Okay, so only on the first day. It might be like too soon to know exactly, but what do you feel like you might be looking forward to this week?
Well, you know, the irony now of my work, which has now been, I was working 10 years before we met. So I'm almost 30 years as an entrepreneur and working with brands for the last 20. And a lot of my partners are here, brands that I work with. And I get to see them on the ground in this space. I get to speak at events with other C-suite folks that I'm working with and advising. And so I think I'm excited to be in the room and to see firsthand and to be a part of that inspiration and conversation. And then I have this incredible main stage moment coming up with Danai Gurira, who's a UN Goodwill Ambassador, and we get to talk about something I'm super passionate about, which is smashing stereotypes, especially in Hollywood, film and content, and she's an amazing example of that. So just sharing in those conversations, Jackie, is what I'm incredibly looking forward to.
Given that we've known each other so long, it's quite an interesting trajectory, because you've come from not a traditional brand background, but you're now having such incredible influence on so many brands. So tell people how that journey happened. How did you start your business briefly, and you've now got Talk to Jess as your consultancy? How has that kind of had that decade kind of journey?
You know, I've been thinking about that a little bit, because as this is my first trip and realizing, like, I'm not coming here with a large agency. I'm not coming here with a big brand partner, but they're all my partners in different ways. I have a very unique niche business. So the consultancy was a lot born out of the work you and I did. When you brought me over as a subject matter expert, a cultural expert, expert on girls and women at that time, I found a pathway to brand advocacy and purpose work with partners that had large platforms, right? Brands export so many messages and have the power to really change the world. And I think that introduction to the possibility that I could work in this space and advise in this space, but still keep a foot in the outside world. I think that's the key to my success as an advisor, is that I'm not fully in-house. I have a world in advocacy and social impact in grassroots voices so that I can bring those to my brand partners. And so Talk to Jess was formed after you and I worked on Dove for a while, and I was their global self-esteem ambassador and helped to build the self-esteem content that's come out of the Dove campaign for Real Beauty. Then as I, you know, kind of got known for that, then brands came to me. And the reason I called my company Talk to Jess is I would get this phone call and it would sound like this. We have a problem with the way we represent women. Someone said I should talk to Jess, or Jackie Cooper said I should talk to Jess. And then I thought, well, that's a great name for a consultancy, right? Because that was the conversation I wanted to be in. And so after Dove, which as I mentioned is going into our 20th year as a partner next year, then came Barbie and Mattel, and they've been a partner for 13 years, and Disney had been a partner for 5 years. Like, I've had these beautiful long-term relationships. So my consultancy works in that we advise on cultural fluency, we advise on campaign and content, and we advise on philanthropic and social impact. And what we do is really bring the voices to the room and make sure that the issues are rooted in authenticity for the audience. And we become authenticity auditors. We get to be, because we've got that foot in the outside world, we get to have the inside brand voice, but the trusted ability to bring them intel from the real world outside of our, you know, briefs and our meeting rooms. Because I think we need that.
I love that nothing daunts you. It's like we've been in all sorts of situations, and that might be that it's a sticky client or mm-hmm. a difficult situation or a very traditional thinker who doesn't want to embrace the real world, to your point of saying, come on.
Yeah.
You're very elegant about saying, come on. And I think it's really interesting, in the time that I've been coming to Cannes, I've seen that purpose has moved away from just being something that lives in an ad.
Yes.
To coming into the world, to being driven by a mission or yes. something that's value driven. It's not just stuck in the creativity. And do you feel that you have to really help clients on that journey, or do you feel that they're better at it now? What's your experience in the last few years of that journey?
It's a great question. I think some brands are getting better at it because their marketers are coming into those roles knowing that purpose is a need to have, not a nice to have. And I actually think the work Edelman's done with the Trust Barometer and all of the research and work, truly, I mean, I think, and we've been partners for a long time, I think that validates mm-hmm. the need to have. But I will say, you know, look, usually purpose has lived in CSR, it's lived in philanthropic outreach. It's kind of a one and done still for yeah. some brands. They want to do it, but they often execute it in a way that kind of belittles the audience more so than brings them up. And so there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of brands who have good intentions, but don't understand how to make bigger impact.
I see the intention often being there, and then that kind of route to getting it out is beset with challenges.
It takes a lot of courage, I think, especially now. I mean, you talk about many years ago having the purpose conversation. I think, look, the world's become more vitriolic. There's a lot more divide. There's a lot more misinformation. And I think I've seen a lot of brands, especially ones I've worked with for a long time, ebb and flow from risk-taking, right? Pull in, pull back, unsure. And I feel like why I'm excited to be here now is watching the conversation expand as we talk about AI and the digital space and lived experiences, and how do we get people to still have courage to take risks to show authentic content.
That's a great, great segue, because obviously we launched this week our annual brand study, which I'm really excited about, and we focused on brands' need to respond to the fact that consumers are feeling super vulnerable in this extremely volatile world. And they're feeling the stress from real societal issues, climate change, the global conflicts, polarization. Have you noticed specifically that increased vulnerability among consumers?
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. And it's huge in our work across all demographics, but I know your work specifically focused on Gen Z, and I concur completely. I think this is the generation that is driving the purpose because they are the most impacted by it, and they are the most affected by it, and most have the most language around it, actually. I think every generation has been impacted by climate change and polarization, but this generation has the digital capacity to connect to others in a way that we never had growing up. So their world is bigger and they can see more into it. Mm. But the vulnerability, especially in the LGBTQ plus community, you know, in the United States in particular, there's a call for transgenocide. There's legislation happening in which books and critical, you know, thinking skills are being banned in institutions. And so it's not just headlines, it's people's real lives, and it's young people's real lives, let alone the fight we're having for reproductive agency and rights. So I think it's at an apex of concern. And I would say that the vulnerability and the safety and security that I saw in the brand trust results I wholeheartedly concur. I think what we hear firsthand is I want to be invited in to a relationship with a brand, but most of all, I want to feel like I'm seen and I'm understood. And then that's what makes them feel safe.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that now we have to think about humans. We can't think about demographics or segments. Right. We have to think about humans. And we've never seen data that shows how vulnerable consumers are feeling. I think the extraordinary thing was how vulnerable young consumers are feeling and their desperate need for safety. Mm-hmm. We had 15-year-olds saying that they were planning financially for their health safety. Mm. 15-year-olds. I mean, this is unheard of.
Absolutely.
So we also see that this need for safety is actually impacting not only their lives, but how they're talking to other generations. I think this could be a big opportunity for brands, but I'm not sure that everyone understands how, as a brand, to help their consumers feel safe. What would you advise them?
Oh boy, I've got two things top of mind. I think to build brand equity with this audience, you need consistency. Consistency, consistency. We call it in our consulting work, we've talked about this, SFSN. Sounds fabulous, signifies nothing. Everybody who's celebrating Pride this month in June, but has not invested in their local or national or country LGBTQ plus community is, you know, a rainbow brand. They're a brand that's showing up for a moment and not for the community. So I would say the first thing to do to make folks feel safe is the consistency in the investment in the community. And then the other piece, which I think, Jackie, is harder for brands to do, but is necessary, is transparency when there is a misstep. Right. Because safety comes with action over time. And we're gone from the time where we'd read a corporate press release or have brand voice tell us something. And we don't believe that. We know it was written from a corporation and not from a real human being talking to me like a real human being. So when I see brands who make missteps, because they will, and we all will, the transparency is really important. That makes a consumer feel safe because they trust you, that you're aware of the impact that you've had on them.
I love that. Safety comes with action over time is going to be forever in my head. A major finding from this report is that, and we got pushed on this a lot when we found it, and it's been so interesting explaining it even before we published the report today, because a major finding of this report is that the linear purchase funnel has collapsed. And consumers are basically expecting an ongoing relationship with brands beyond that point of purchase. And so, you know, we very much say that the point of purchase used to be the end game, mm-hmm. right? In that purchase funnel, that was everyone, oh, wow, they bought something, I'm done.
Right.
And now it's needing that consistent action, interaction, engagement. What are some of the ways that you see brands extend a relationship beyond that purchase funnel, sort of traditional way of working?
You said the keyword, which is relationship, and they're the currency of business, and they, like safety, are built with action over time. Think about any relationship we have. It's what you invest into it. So if we're transactional and our end goal has been that funnel in which point of purchase is the final time I expect to engage with you, that is an older model of doing business, right? This generation wants a relationship. They want to see you show up at the events that they love, for the causes that they care about. They want to see you show up in their lives to surprise and delight in ways that are relational. Right. And brands, I think, don't you have the hardest time imagining that? Because historically, we've been trained to not do that, right? Yes, we've been trained to kind of keep those folks at an arm's length. And I think this generation, Gen Z, this is what I loved about your work, was they've named it, which is that end point is probably the beginning for some. They will look to see what you do after the point of purchase, not what brings you up to it.
Yeah, it's an incredible discipline, actually, because we looked at the purchase funnel and we thought, well, if they're not doing that, what are they doing? And we described it as this sort of infinite trust loop, because you have to be always on, like you were saying about the relationship. You have to be always on, and you're going to engage me, you have to attract me, but then I need to know why, and I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. And that sort of two-way relationship, that two-way interaction, that always on, is a very different marketing model. But if you think about it, we're in a very different world. That's and right. This generation and beyond, because it isn't just Gen Z, are saying, well, I actually need to know what you're doing after I give you my money, because I'm not sure that I'm going to continue to give you my money.
Right. And they have options not to.
And they have options not to, right? So 78% in that data said that they uncover things and attract them and make them loyal to a brand after their purchase. 78%. So when we say that, do you think that brands need to sort of rethink what they respond to consumers? I mean, you talk to CMOs all the time and you have that in your head. What would you say to a CMO who's looking at kind of making the most of that opportunity?
You know, I would say the why is the most important. I think a lot of times we see a lot of marketing efforts, especially social impact efforts, that feel really hollow. Again, it's SFSN. Sounds fabulous, signifies nothing. And we can see right through it, and consumers can feel right through it. I think today, folks are looking for meaning. I think there's so much institutional distrust also in the political systems that, you know, when we first started doing this work 20 years ago, there was no way that we could imagine putting Dove in schools, the Dove self-esteem curriculum, because it was like separation of church and state, right? A brand in a school, no way. Like, that's too commercial. And now we're at this evolved space with brands integrating into so many ways. And we're in hundreds of schools, thousands of schools around the world. And I think that evolution is something I want CMOs to pay attention to. We used to not have permission to be in a consumer's life in other ways. And now it's like, if you don't do that and do it earnestly and honestly, then what are you really connecting to them on? Because they don't want a transactional dynamic, you know? And so I would say one, develop the courage to be consistent. I would say two, know your why, and if you're unclear, don't do it. Because I think that's when sometimes CMOs and all marketing teams get the effort, like they try something, it doesn't work, and then they recoil.
Right.
And I think the courage comes in saying, like, okay, let's refine the why, let's be in conversation. Again, that's the relational piece of this.
Do you think that it's sort of scary for a CMO? Like, when you go and see these people and they say, talk to Jess, is there a kind of consistent thread for that first phone call in terms of why you? Because you've got this quite specific space, you work with agencies.
Yep.
Why, what do you think is the sort of consistent thread? Is there one in terms of that kind of help us out?
What they're feeling.
Like this agony aunt of how to do it.
I know, I learned the word agony aunt when we were doing our advice column. I was so offended, and then I was so delighted by that term. I would say the consistency of an executive who reaches out to us is probably more so about validation. They've heard it from their agency partners. They've heard it from other insights internally. I think what we do, and we work with agencies and insights teams to contextualize and put into human language these insights and stats, right? So what does 78% really mean? Or what does that look like if there's distrust? And so I think we become this extra ingredient for an executive. And look, I think in a lot of ways, we're a small team. We've been very nimble with the folks that we work with. And that's why we work with them for a long time, because we have this relationship. And so I think we become a sounding board for CMOs and execs. I think we become validators. We also become, you know, aggregators and aggravators. You know, we push. We push because we can. Eventually, we work for the consumer to be better represented. And my modality is working with brands to do that. But my end game is human beings. I think the through line is hesitation, perhaps some fear of, you know, look, people get fired when they make tough decisions that don't work out, or they take a risk. And so I think sometimes it's a cross between insights and cultural strategy, and then like personal coaching and professional development to get folks internally making sure it's not just them, it's their teams, it's their entire organization that cares about this. It can't just be the marketing team that cares about it.
And that's so interesting, because we talk about this collision at Edelman between brand and reputation. Mm-hmm. It used to be so separate, and now the corporate world, the reputation world, the brand world is completely molded.
Yeah.
You work a lot out of the US. Do you feel like with everything that's going on politically in the US, that that's accentuated the advice that you're giving? You're having to be politically savvy, right? Because it's now become such a loaded situation, and it's so much more complex.
It is. We do work with global brands, but the US part of this conversation has been really tricky, especially heading into an election year next year. And the conversation on Board for Purpose is, how much do we double down? I think for us, what we do long, hopefully before political climate turns really ugly, which is already kind of there in a lot of ways, is we say, not you're just going to skim the middle, because I do think people have to have a point of view. And I think if you're on the side of your consumer, going back to your research, if you're trying to solve vulnerability and safety and security, that is not political. That is human.
Yeah.
And if you can gain the courage internally to say, listen, we're a company that sells kids products. So if I'm talking to kids and their families, then I have to be for all families.
Right.
And so what does that mean? What does that do? That's not Democratic or Republican or conservative or liberal. That's humanity.
Yeah.
And I think that's the call to action for brands right now. And I'm not suggesting even to my clients that they swing big in the fences for next year, but I ask them, stay consistent, invest meaningfully, and do not take your foot off the gas. Because when you do, that's when this generation goes, uh-uh, that wasn't truthful then.
It's better to stand for something than stand for nothing. And actually, standing for nothing is when you lose your audience.
Absolutely.
And standing for nothing is when the distrust will grow, right?
Yes. And listen, you're not going to be a brand for everybody, and nor should you.
Right.
Because then how do I know why you're for me?
Right.
I think that's where, Jackie, it takes the most courage right now for teams to know, look, we might take a stand on this issue and we may lose consumers, but who do we want to be as a brand? What are we aiming to do? I think it's a reckoning time. I actually find it wildly exciting, because I think just like with people, when there's a reckoning time, you get more clear, your life comes into a different kind of focus, and you feel more relatable.
Reference my earlier point that you're brave. So I'm going to bring this like a full circle, that we met in the world of young girls with Mary Kate and Ashley, and young women and young girls with Dove. You've done so much work over the years on empowering women and girls. I'm a mom of two girls who are now grown women who kind of grew up during that period, and they rang me and said, "Mom, we're at school," and both of them separately, for 4 years different, "we just watched the Dove viral film." It's like, it's not a viral film, it became viral. Became viral because it was so brilliant. What do you do today, given the trajectory of how it's been for women and young girls in particular, about advising brands, about advocating for young girls today?
Yeah, what's really interesting. So I have been, before Dove and before any of my brand work, I've been in the self-esteem space, right? Yeah. I've been working on confidence for 30 years with women and girls. And what I will say is the paradigm has shifted and my work has shifted. Initially, as practitioners and educators, we focused on the girl. We want to build you up. We want you to be more confident, be empowered, right? And now the paradigm has shifted, because girls are empowered, right, and they are confident.
Right.
What's not is the world around them.
Right.
The ecosystem, the systems in place, education, parents, coaches, teachers, the larger world, advertising, right? We are not supporting the unique diversity and direct empowerment of girls. And so I've switched my modality to be working on the ecosystem around girls and women instead of giving the message to girls and women. And I think that's something, if anybody's listening, if they want to take away what's the future of empowerment messaging for girls, is stop trying to make them confident and remove the barriers that stop them from feeling confident. That's a brand like heroism pitch I would like to make, is like we can remove those barriers for them. The other thing I will say is that this generation of girls, Gen Z in particular, Gen Alpha coming up behind them, they are deeply aware that not everybody is a boy or a girl. And I know that generations might proclaim that they're confused by gender identity and pronouns and whatnot, but what I will tell you is the toothpaste is out of the tube. Girls now, yes, they want to be empowered, but they want you to empower their non-binary friend. They want you to empower their friend who doesn't know what gender they would like to identify as. And so I think what we used to code girl and boy is shifting for this generation.
It's so interesting, because we grew up expecting everything to be sectored and everyone would stay in their box, and then we'd try and project to you,
right,
and all gloves are off now. But in actual fact, it should be liberating and it should be opportunistic, but it seems quite intimidating, and there's a kind of paralysis of action, I think, for fear of getting it wrong. So I hope that if people listen to this, they'll understand better to try.
Yes.
Than not to try.
Absolutely.
And how do you manage that whole gender debate with clients? How do you kind of guide them through that?
We do a long-term internal education process. I don't think I'd expect any team to automatically know this if they haven't introspected around it, or if generationally you don't have this group on your team, right? And so we can't do party of one, like, well, my kid is this and my kid is that. I know we all like to do that, but it's a little bit bigger than that. So what we do is, alongside of any content creation or content review, we'll do workshops, or we'll do team workshops where we're introducing the concepts in a way that hopefully doesn't overwhelm teams, but gives them the tools. We do this a lot with writers' rooms for video games and for television and film. We just give them some guardrails of like how to think about gender, how to talk about gender, how to ask questions. That curiosity is really important, because that will lead to courage. I think sometimes we're so afraid of getting it wrong, we don't do anything.
Right.
And to your point, and again, going back to brand trust, is a consumer sees you being silent. Silent equals consent. It means you're complicit. And so I think somebody, you know, a young person in particular, wants to see a brand do something. If they don't do something accurately, okay, great, I see that, I'm learning, I'm growing, thank you, move on. When we clam up and we don't get into the conversation, that's when we don't feel you're really invested in the truth.
Do you have a feel for where it's going to go? Because it feels like so much has been sort of opened up in the last couple of years. You've got such a good antennae for this stuff. How do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think as we look inside the workforce, that's what we should be focused on. I mean, think about your teams. Think about who's coming into the workforce. Right. Gen Z is in the workforce. You know that.
Yep.
You've championed this well ahead in advance, right? Yep. Like Gen Z is our next iteration of executives. They're not just our consumers, they're our workforce.
Yep.
And that's why I think people of other generations or other life experiences, we need to get on board, and instead of, you know, kind of resisting, is we're evolving. And I think the way we work is evolving, what we believe about work, the work we make for other people. So I think it can be unsettling if we're stuck in the binary, because that's comfortable and familiar,
right?
Because we know the world is not binary and it's not going back, you know? And so I, again, toothpaste out of the tube, I say, like, let's learn, let's evolve, let's be transparent, and most of all, be courageous and curious. Curiosity will unlock the, you know, examining bias and, you know, asking yourselves questions. And I think eventually that becomes a non-negotiable for our next generation of creatives.
I love speaking to you always, Jess, not because you're my friend, but because you're so smart on this stuff and you help us understand how to make the most of what's out there, not to be intimidated by it. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your insights, your expertise, for being my partner in so many of these things. And thank you to you all for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.